podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Stash, an Atlassian product. Stash offers behind-the-firewall Git management for your source code. Secure, fast, and enterprise-grade. To learn more about Stash and try it free for 30 days, visit Atlassian.com/twit. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone and other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 120, recorded on Tuesday, July 30th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
The OG gang in the house.
We're kicking it. We're all alone. We got no guests.
Exactly. I have to say real quick, I went camping over the weekend.
I heard.
I learned two things.
Yes?
Two things that that relate to Android and Google.
I know one of these lessons, but let's see where the other one is.
Okay. The first one, we were sitting by the river, me and my buds, and I was wearing Google Glass. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, a squirrel jumps out of a tree onto my friend's shoulders, and my friend jumps up and he's like, ah, because there's this little squirrel literally doing the, like, cartoon thing where they're like running around front and back, right? And so I'm like, this is perfect. I'm wearing Google Glass. I can do something. I go to take it. First time ever, totally locks up. It won't do anything. I'm like, what is going on? So I'm like fiddling.
No, squirrel, do it again.
What is up? My friend had a DSLR.
Yeah.
Turns it on. It locked up.
Were you in some sort of
electromagnetic
field? Where were you camping?
Well, we were camping up outside of Tahoe. Is that like a bad area for...
It sounds like there's some sort of electrical stuff going on.
Jamming technology?
Yeah, I think you might have been nearby something, some sort of installation.
I just wanted that perfect experience where it was like, I would have never been able to capture this had I not been wearing
Google. Both pieces of technology failed.
That was really weird.
I thought the punchline was going to be that your friend took out the DSLR and like was able to focus and frame right. and get this perfect video while you were unable to get it on glass. So at least both of you locked up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was that almost happened, but his technology locked up too. So I'm pretty sure that the squirrel has like jamming technology of some sort
of cyborg squirrel that blocks any sort of technology or recordings from happening.
It was
or
really
an
weird.
Squirrel.
And I've never had glass lock up like that. So first time for everything.
So what was the second lesson?
The second lesson was, wow, I need to get a new phone.
Wow.
Because you really learn a lot about how your phone operates when you're away from your normal situation, your normal environment, your Wi-Fi hotspots. And, oh, man, all weekend I was battling this thing. And
what was the main problem?
Just slow, unresponsive things. You know, I want it to do this one thing and I click it and I wait 10 seconds and I feel like I was here a couple of months ago and then I wiped out the phone and started over.
Wow.
It's time.
It was connectivity or the phone just being sluggish or both?
Oh, both. Well, yeah, but connectivity I understood. Like I was in the woods. Battery life was okay because I was up there. I turned off all antennas because it just didn't matter. But it was just... I had the point with this that I had with my original Motorola Droid where I was just like, okay, I'm ready. I need to move on.
Do we have to start Jason Watch now? Is Jason in the market for a new phone?
I think it's time.
We're going to start. Gina, you weren't here last time this happened. This was, what was it, 16 months? How long did it go on for?
16 months? What?
It felt like forever. Let's just say that.
It was months before the Galaxy Nexus. The Galaxy Nexus happened, and I knew I was getting it because I had already spent months in this zone. So it could still be another year. I could spend a year in this zone.
It's a slow process, really. Jason likes to evaluate. He likes to compare. He likes to make sure he's making the right purchase with his phone.
It's painful.
It's going to be all right, man. It's going to be okay. There are so many opportunities to buy a better handset in the next few weeks.
I have a lot to look forward to. We'll see if the Moto X is what I have to look forward to. I'm wondering if it is. I'm not really entirely sure yet, but... Yep. We'll see.
I'm tempted by that HTC One. Now that I know Gina got the Google edition of that, I'm jealous. I'm actually... Yeah.
I'm digging it. It's pretty great.
But the thing is, like, the Nexus 7, like, we're going to look at the new Nexus 7, and my Nexus 7 works fine. My Nexus 4 is working fine. I have no complaints, so...
Yeah, you got the N4. You've got no reason to upgrade.
You know, if I can survive Comic-Con with this. I can, you know.
You can survive anything.
It didn't run into any problems. And once I had that battery thing, which, by the way, I brought to show you. So after the show.
Oh, awesome.
Thing, yeah. So
anyway. Excellent.
All right.
So. Well, we have a lot to talk about. We'll be discussing, well, the awesome breakfast with Sundar, which turned out to be pretty interesting. Obviously, Nexus 7, Android 4.3, and the roundhouse kick that no one saw coming, which was the Chromecast. And we have a few of these things in-house to show off, plus so much more. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into the news.
Well, of course, in the lead up to the Nexus 7 announcement last Wednesday, Sundar Pichai threw up a few charts showing how Google or Android is doing in the tablet market. And it turns out that they're doing pretty well. Google has activated more than 70 million Android tablets and served 50 billion, that's billion,
wow,
with a B, apps. Android tablet activations, around 50 million of those Android tablet activations happening in 2013 alone. At Google I/O back in May, Google announced 48 billion Google Play downloads. So that means over 2 billion titles have been downloaded in just the last few weeks. So what else? Google Play now offers more than 1 million apps and games and has seen 2.5 times increase in revenue per user. So let's see. Cult of Android compares this to Apple CEO Tim Cook. It announced last month that the App Store currently has, the iOS App Store has 900,000 apps on offer. So it sounds like, with this latest information from Google, that Google has overtaken them. And relatedly, Strategy Analytics has published a second quarter report for global tablet shipments. And the firm found that Android accounted for 67% of worldwide shipments in the second quarter of 2013, beating out the iPad and tablet market share. Both iOS and Windows declined to 28% and 4.5% of the global market share, respectively. So Google's doing pretty well in the tablet area, and they're going to do even better with the new Nexus 7.
Well, I think the stat in that and the statistics that you rattled off, the one that caught my ear was the revenue per user, which has long been the point of criticism for Android users, is that Android users don't spend money because there were majority phones and things like that. But it's curious and it's interesting to see as the tablet growth has, I don't know, would you call this a boom? I mean, boomed? I mean, this is, shown positive growth. It looks like now people are spending more money. And as the apps are getting more evolved, the Android customer is becoming one that can, generate money for developers, which I think is great.
Yeah, at this point, thankfully, it's a snake that's kind of eating its own tail, if that analogy works here.
Sure, we'll go with it.
Maybe in the reverse, but I mean, I don't even want to go there because I know I destroyed it. I know. Let's just move on. Because at this point, there are enough Android tablet users that developers want to make their apps tablet friendly, if not tablet exclusive in some regards. So absolutely, the scenario has changed so much in 1 year.
Yep.
Because year ago, crazy. It was in trouble to a large degree.
Yeah, I felt like
it
was
very
more,
criticized.
Yeah, it was more of a niche product and it was very kind of people who were in the know or techie or, and that sort of thing. And now, with the number of devices that are available and with Google kind of, a year plus now into the Nexus line of tablets, and just in doing the Arena stuff, I'm seeing more and more apps, specifically on the tablet side, just being evolved in terms of their look and feel. I mean, I don't want to say they're looking more iOS-y because they're not looking more iOS-y, but is that a word, iOS-y? They're using a lot more photography. They're using a lot more imagery. The UIs are getting more, it's less clunky. It's less dependent on the default things. Like, you can see that people are putting both, development resources as well as design resources into it. And that's the thing that gets to mass consumer consumption, because then it looks like a consumer device that people can utilize and get a lot of, a lot of powerful experiences out of.
Mm-hmm. So.
They're doing a really good job of doing the carrot stick in the developer console as well. Like, I've been uploading new APKs of my app, and I keep getting these, nagging hints like, hey, you didn't upload screenshots for a 10-inch tablet. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't have a 10-inch tablet. I know 10-inch isn't really a popular size. I had uploaded 7-inch screenshots a while ago. But it's like, hey, if you do this, we'll add you to the design for tablet section. You really should do this. I mean, there's constantly hints. And finally, I just did it because I was like, I don't want to see this in the developer console anymore. Mm-hmm. So Google's done a really good job, too, of just pushing developers that way with the console updates.
Smart move.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
From that perspective and just a design in general perspective, this past year you've seen them take a really big step in saying, this is how you make your app friendly for tablets and just in design in general. This is how you make it pretty.
And just the Play Store alone in the past two months. I mean, just, you know, browsing for apps again for the arena, you know, yesterday and over the weekend, like just seeing like the subtle little UI differences that they're rolling out, it seems like on a daily basis within the Play Store itself, which gives, you know, it's not hard to find the information I need for an app, to see that screenshot, to watch a video. It just, it's coming together nicely. I gotta admit, this has been a, you know, the tortoise and the hare, you know, slow and steady wins the race. I mean, I think that's what's happening here. So, yeah. But as we're speeding up a little, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was kind of the beginning of the breakfast. Everybody was still very hungry at this point.
What'd you have for breakfast that day?
I think I had a little, you know, pre-breakfast treat in Android 4.3. I kind of knew what was coming to some degree, but there were some surprises there on the plate. Wow, this
let's just
get as much traction out of this one as possible. Let's do
I think we just lost 2 subscribers to the show right there.
But we gained 3 more.
Yes,
so
that's
there you
true.
Go.
People who love awkward comparisons. Okay, so what did we gain? Okay, so it was much rumored and expected. Bluetooth Smart, a.k.a. Bluetooth LE, which basically is great for apps communicating to things like fitness, you know, devices, for example, fitness, medical, location, proximity, all these different features integrated in there. So that's a really good inclusion. OpenGL ES 3.0. I'm not an expert in this kind of thing, but they showed off flashy graphics and games running with this support. And I got to tell you, those games are looking really good.
People like the flashy graphics.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they do, man, it's just crazy how much you can do from a gaming perspective on these tiny little devices nowadays. I love it.
Lens flare. J.J. Abrams style lens flare. Who doesn't want that?
I know, right?
Lens flare makes life better. That's what it comes down to. J.J. Abrams figured it out in Star Trek and soon to be in Star Wars and now on Android. So.
There you go. This is cool, and I don't know if many people saw this coming. Restricted profiles. So we already had kind of profiles added in so that if you had a tablet, you could have a different profile for each person. Restricted profiles allows kind of a manager of those profiles to essentially set, well, as it says, restrictions for use on the different profiles. So, for example, they use the kind of kids scenario as an example where you have, you know, a profile set up for your kids, but you don't want your kids to be able to do certain things. You don't want them to be able to activate GPS or buy apps in the App Store or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can set those restrictions on their profile, and that's awesome.
That's really cool. And what's great is that what I think it's different than what Amazon has done with their kid restricted app, because it's not just for kids. Like, you can set a restricted application for a restricted user profile for your teenager or for your spouse or for whomever, you know, if you're sharing it around. Like, it's you know,
or for your students. And remember back at IO, they're placing a big emphasis on education, everything. This is this kind of ties directly into
that's
that
great.
I think.
And this is nice for kiosks as well.
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, for stores and kiosks, that kind of thing.
So very really cool. Android everywhere. Android even more everywhere than before. New media capabilities, specifically digital rights management, which kind of has a bad rap, but they added in a lot of different DRM schemes into here. One that you can see right away is the fact that Netflix is now supporting full 1080p streaming,
cool,
which they didn't before. They can now because Android 4.3 supports the DRM frameworks that enable that. So that's cool. Notification access. Your apps can actually interact with stream of status bar notifications. So how best to describe this? Let's say right now in your notification panel, you can do things like pause, play, stuff like that. It's possible with this that you could control even further, like skip into the middle of the song or whatever. Mm-hmm. Have even further control of your notifications and interactivity with those.
That's cool.
That, I think, will be really cool once developers hop onto that. I did miss one. Photospheres. Improvements to Photosphere, which I think they improved the stitching. I haven't really seen like a before and after on that or exactly what the specific changes are there, but they worked on making that better. And I know in the Photospheres I've taken that stitching can sometimes, I mean, it completely ruin it if you do it
that one big section missing or misaligned or whatnot. Right. Yeah. So.
And you have more,
I want to be the guy who gets paid to go to the exotic islands to take the Photosphere example. Well, this island is amazing in this Android life. Or
well, someone's got to go do it. Fine.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, I'll go to Turks and Caicos. whatever.
We would. I mean, you know, we don't want our photospheres to look bad on an island. So,
yeah, nobody goes to Detroit to do a photosphere example. But that wasn't all that was kind of tied into Android 4.3. As Android 4.3 has been rolling out and developers have been diving into it, it was revealed that a couple of interesting little tidbits are in there as well. 4K resolution support. It's not necessarily active right now. It's kind of buried. There's a few lines of code that point to the XXX HDPI settings. And, you know, while we're not going to see any 4K tablets or devices running at that crazy high resolution, it is interesting to see that Android is planning for it. And, you know, possibly, you know, plugging a phone or a tablet into a 4K television could be supported, and that much richer, higher resolution display support. So going back to your flashy graphics, that really high 4K resolution, which is kind of crazy. Additionally, also, there's an interesting little thing called App Ops. You saw what I do during the day. App Ops. So it's currently hidden in 4.3 and it's inactive right now, but there are kind of ways the developers have been tinkering around to wake it up and have it actually be, if you're running in 4.3. And this allows users to disable permissions for apps, similar to how CyanogenMod did it with their app permissions control.
Mm-hmm.
So giving you more control over the individual apps and what specific permissions they get. Again, an example of the modding community and with CyanogenMod doing something and then kind of Google kind of rolling it into the operating system, which I think is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And that's obviously – that's not rolled out necessarily. It's kind of hidden in the code. There's a way to trick it so that you can get it to work. They pointed out in this Android Police article that maybe one of the reasons why it's not live in real time right now for everybody is because when you hide a permission, say, you know, something very critical for an app like Facebook – it ends up not working in Facebook, and you end up getting an error message, but it doesn't really tie back into that as being, like, the reason. So from an end-user perspective, you know, that'd be very confusing. They turn it on, and then Facebook starts getting all weird, and maybe they forgot that they turned it on, or they didn't know that they did, and there's no kind of feedback to understand why suddenly that doesn't work. So maybe they're still working on that to get it to work.
Probably. I mean, that's my guess.
Yeah.
And then as 4.3 is rolled out and more people's looked at it, it is an interesting note that some developers have picked up on the fact that in Android 4.3, some apps suddenly have persistent notifications after you upgrade. And are you doing an example here of that? Or? No? Okay. I didn't know what you were doing here. But so now, so basically what happens is that after the upgrade to Android 4.3, some applications have persistent notifications in the status bar that it was believed that this is an attempt to call attention to behavior that isn't quite okay. Developers have made applications impossible to kill and don't alert users to the fact that they're still running. They do this by creating a malformed notification object that doesn't appear in the status bar but still tricks the activity manager into allowing the service to enter the foreground. So there, you know, on Android Police is a whole great breakdown of it. Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting kind of development with Android 4.3, kind of showing some of the, I guess, the kinks in the armor of notifications and some of the tricks developers have been doing. So keep an eye out for that. And I'm sure that we're going to see a lot. I've already seen a ton of app updates, you know, come down since last week. So
yeah, I think the initial knee jerk reaction to this was, you know, why? I don't want a persistent notification. Why are they doing that? Yep. That's why they're doing that. Because, and this is kind of an example of what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. Google's doing a great job of improving Android to a point to where it kind of guides developers in the right way to develop for Android, whereas before it was just kind of the Wild West. This is a way of them saying, like, yeah, you shouldn't do that.
It reminds me of a tower defense game. You know, where like you've got all these developers running into the Android field and they're just figuring out ways and ways around. And every now and then Google's like, oh, well, you're playing notifications here. Well, you can't do that anymore. And now we've got to turn left and they got to figure out another way. I mean, that's essentially what it is. They're setting these kind of, you know, they're trying to guide the developers down a path to what is the true use of Android or the best case practice. And the thing is, if anything, developers are, you know, ingenious. They can figure out workarounds. They can figure out things to, you know, ways to work through systems to get their app to do what they want it to do. Mm-hmm. And then it requires the Android team to kind of react to that and learn from it. And if it's not doing – and if the developers need to do a workaround to get something to happen, then maybe something needs to be looked at in the operating system. And it looks like that's what Google is doing. So while it might seem restrictive and kind of, you know, kind of I don't want to say power hungry, but I think it's for the good of the application. So –
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, this sounds like malicious developers. Or, I mean, I can't think of too many use cases where developers would have to do this.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's the developers trying to work around. I mean, creating a malformed notification object to bring your app to the foreground without letting the user know, that's not anything that any developer should be doing legitimately.
That's not cool. Yep.
And if there's a legitimate use case, then Google should enable it in the API, yep. excuse me, legitimately versus doing this.
Yep.
But yeah, it is kind of like tower defense.
Absolutely.
All right.
So cool stuff. That is not all. But we'll turn to email.
Yeah, because we've got a whole section for the rest of it.
Oh, right? we've got a whole section for the rest of it.
Yeah.
That's not even all with 4.3. We've got a pretty big one here to talk about. Gerard Berry was one of a decent amount of people who emailed us at aaa@twit.tv to let us know about this, and I think this is fantastic. Gerard says, once or twice over the last couple of episodes, you briefly discussed the very real slowdown of the Galaxy Nexus and the Nexus 7 over time. As an owner, I've begrudgingly listened intently to those conversations. I, too, have noticed the slowdown. It's made me sad. Apparently, there is a reason and a solution, both of which are detailed in the attached article from Android Central about trim being included in the 4.3 update. I believe it's actually Brian Klug, who we've had on in a past episode of All About Android from Anon Tech. Who actually discovered this. Essentially, they've inserted the ability to trim the flash memory or is it the RAM? I believe it's the flash memory, which is largely agreed that this is why the slowdown is happening. So people who have the first generation Nexus 7 have noticed over the past year that it's going a lot slower. I know, Ron, you have not experienced this.
I have at home on my wife's
Nexus 7 for sure. A lot of people have. And then, you know, potentially things like my slow, incredible, I want to throw it out the window, Galaxy Nexus. So hopefully, once you get updated to 4.3, trim will essentially take place. Now, it's not going to happen right away. It's not the kind of thing where once you have 4.3, immediately all your troubles are gone. It's going to manage this once, I believe, your device is plugged in and not in use. So, like, when you plug it in at night and it's just charging overnight, it will detect that it hasn't been used for a little while, and it will do that kind of stuff on a regular basis, I think even on a 24-hour basis if you're plugging it in regularly. So this is a direct addressing of those issues. It could mean that devices just end up feeling great longer. This is one of those cases where if this was always running and you never knew that there was an issue, you wouldn't know the great things that this is doing for you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it'd be very easy to dismiss it. But this is great if it really does seem to speed things up, which I've heard from people who've got 4.3 on their Nexus 7 that it does. So,
well, I've still yet to get it. I know that there's the whole workaround. I can stop the services and go up on Wi-Fi and force it, but I haven't done that yet. I think I'm the last one. You all have it so far, right?
I just got it right before the show. I mean, literally, I've been tapping check now, and then right before the show it said, there's an update to be downloaded. This trim technology, this is basically like defragging for SSDs. Okay. All right.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I think we talked about it a little bit a couple of episodes ago, but it's instead of what they've been doing is they've been just directly writing to the flash. And what they need to be doing is wiping out that stuff in advance.
That space
before writing into it. The way that it gets over time is that it gets really, really cluttered up, and instead of having it empty to write into, it has to overwrite it and then write into it, and that's what takes it longer.
I mean, it's the old chalkboard method.
Like,
I mean, like, basically your memory is a chalkboard, and you can either clean the chalkboard really, really well and then write on it, or you can write on top of what you wrote, or there's a whole bunch of and everything in between. Gina, I haven't thought about defragging in years. Wow,
I haven't.
Like, do you remember running Norton Disk Doctor and refragging your hard drive?
Oh.
Yes.
Like, you do it like on Friday when you go out.
Rock
and you go,
as far as galore, but you'd feel so good afterwards.
Yeah, no,
because you shower like
you saw all the little boxes that were complete now, and
man, there's a red box there. Go away, red box.
Wow.
Yes, for
but yeah, no, it's. It sounds like this. It's defrag for SSD, which is probably something they need. I mean, that problem still persists, so you got to make sure the memory is clean before you overwrite onto it. So, interesting.
I really like your memory is a chalkboard.
That's
a nice ring to it.
Yep.
Before we get into hardware, let's thank one of our sponsors of today's episode. and that is Atlassian. We're in the middle of an exploding digital economy right now. It's driven by software. We talk about software all the time on this show. Nearly every company on the planet is actually becoming, in essence, a software company. So Stash, which is an Atlassian product, helps software teams take advantage of Git, the newest trend in development to write quality code quickly. Now, Stash provides a central place to create and manage Git repositories hosted on your own servers. It's the place where all distributed code comes back together, where you can find the latest official version of your project and keep track of code activity. Stash significantly reduces maintenance and gives IT administrators flexibility to control user management and permissions. Your servers, your rules. Stash supports your growing Git repositories within the safety of your firewall. Stash's traceability and integration points actually allow teams to follow their code from development all the way through delivery in one single system. Development isn't just about coding. Teams using Stash can actually quickly get a handle on which branches are affected by a particular bug and who's actually working on the fix for that bug. It can be a struggle to bring new technology trends to a large enterprise. Stash enables teams to embrace Git using existing environments and authentication with fine-grained permissions and code traceability enterprise teams, all within the safety of your firewall. Enterprise code can be complicated. We all know that, but administration is simple with Stash. You create a project, you add Git repositories, and you assign permissions to those, all in a matter of seconds. And you can avoid the overhead of managing Git for your team with an intuitive interface to add users and groups, create and manage code repositories, as well as logical project structure. Stash fully integrates with Jira, understanding what issues were fixed and what code changes fixed those issues. This is all very important. Track the progress of work being done on Jira issues. So here's what you can do. If this sounds interesting to you, go to Atlassian.com/twit. For more information on Stash, as well as all their other projects and products, they offer so much there. Atlassian.com/twit. Monthly plans actually start at $10 per month for up to 10 users. You can try it free for 30 days. Remember, Atlassian.com/twit, and select Stash when you get there. We thank Atlassian for their support of All About Android and the Twit Network. All right, without further ado, let's get into hardware. So we talked and kind of laughed a little at the whole Nexus Q resurgency thingy majigger thing. And then
they dropped it.
And then they gave you this little dongle-y thing.
Can we open it?
Chromecast. $35 for this thing. Yes. Ron, you open it. I will talk about it.
You open it. I'll open it. You talk about it. I was shocked when this, like, I totally did a double take.
Yeah.
Like on the web. I went like, what? It was like I was looking at my browser and I was like, really? So tell them what it is.
All right. So Chromecast, it requires 2.3 and up. Basically, it's cross-platform. It's an HDMI stick. So what you do with this is you plug this little bad boy into the HDMI port on, let's say, your big screen TV at home, for example. On the side of it is a little USB port. So it's powered by USB. It's not powered through HDMI. I don't know if that's something that'll be enabled later or what. Or is that even possible to be powered by HDMI? Maybe not.
HDMI carries power. Doesn't. Yeah.
So it might look a little weird depending on your configuration at home having this little cable. But, I mean, it would be that way if it was a cable built into the connector anyways. So it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. So according to this, it says getting started, plug it in. HDMI, USB power, or a power adapter. So HDMI does not carry power. Change the input and then set it up. So,
all right. So there you go. If you have a phone, a tablet on Android or iOS, which is very neat that they covered both platforms, or a computer running Chrome OS, Mac OS, or Windows, you can install Google Cast into like your Chrome browser, and you can cast content from the browser up onto the screen. Essentially, this has Wi-Fi built into it. So it connects to your Wi-Fi access point. If your device is also on the Wi-Fi access point, you can, for example, Netflix, YouTube, Google Play all have updated their apps so that they support Chromecast. And you can control in the same way that you could with the Nexus Q and YouTube content. You can control playback and send, you know, media, the media link from your device up to your TV. You're not actually broadcasting content directly from your device to the screen. you're essentially sending a link so that this, which is connected to Wi-Fi, can then go on the internet and pull that link and show you what you requested.
It's like a remote tab.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. That's a great way to put it,
actually. Up on your TV. I just got mine today. I have not plugged it in yet. Again, I just picked it up in the mail and I haven't been able to plug it in, but I'm so excited about this thing. But it's running Chrome OS and
no,
it's very clearly, very strongly branded Chrome.
It's not running Chrome OS though. People have been picking it apart. So that was kind of a strange discovery that as people have been kind of getting in there and taking a look at it, I know I have a link in here, blog.gtvhacker.com. You know, of course, people are already very busy in pulling this apart and trying to get root access.
Look at
and
this
I think
tiny
in some
manual.
Cases they have.
Look at this. It's like
a stick of gum.
Yeah. And basically they're saying that it's not necessarily running Chrome OS. It's also not necessarily running full Android OS. It's running kind of a combination of both. This article actually kind of likens it to a type of Google TV. It's running a certain type of Google TV.
Yeah. So this is interesting.
Yeah.
Why would Google branded it that way?
But the thing is, I think the Google TV brand, you guys know how much I love the Google TV. I think the Google TV brand is, at least internally in Google, dead. I mean, if anything, this shows how it's dead. The idea of building of a device or a box or whatever that is doing that Google TV thing, I haven't seen much activity from the Google TV team at all. We didn't see anything at I/O. Clearly, what they want to do is Google's, at least from my understanding of Google's strategy, is that Chrome and Android are your entry points into the world, into the web. All the stuff they've done with Chrome with syncing and device syncing and desktop syncing and all that sort of thing. So their brand, and with all the TV commercials, they're branding Chrome as the Google's window to the internet. Mm-hmm. And then pairing this with devices and having the interaction on the screen be powered by the device that goes with the idea of Android as the mobile platform. Why build a Roku box or a Google TV box or whatever when we've got this little dongle you can plug in and you can do everything from it? Yeah. So it's really interesting, really fascinating.
It's really interesting that they made that branding choice. So I mean, when I saw the presentation on this, I thought, like, sad trombones for Android, right? Because this means that if Chromecast is successful, which how can it not be, you know, if it works at that price point, that means that it beat out two Android-based set-tops, right? The Nexus Q and the Google TV. And it's just interesting to me that Google went with the Chrome brand to do web on your TV, right? That was the promise to Google TV, web on your TV. But it's so interesting to me that this is actually running, the GTVhacker.com is saying that this stick is running more Android than Chrome OS. It's like a modified Google TV release. That's interesting to me, especially since they went with Chromecast. I mean, I agree that the Google TV brand stinks and has a bad name, but why wasn't it the Nexus Cast?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And the only thing I can think of is that they've built out Android as a mobile platform and then distributed it through different phones. So you don't often see people, you know, like we talk about, my Android phone, but to consumers, it's Samsung Galaxy, it's HTC One, it's these phones. So Android Cast wouldn't have made much sense. They put so much behind Chrome and all those commercials move, you know, I see commercials in the movie theaters and things like that. I really believe they're putting all their cards behind Chrome as the public facing Google brand to interact with.
Chrome hardware. I mean, Chrome is still a browser to most consumers, right? We know we have Chromebooks, right? But most consumers don't. I mean, it's just interesting that they put a browser brand name on a piece of hardware.
But think about it though, because this piece of hardware interacts with iOS as well. So you call this Android Cast, and if you're an iPhone user, I can't use it. Chrome is the one application across Google that is completely platform independent.
Yeah,
right.
If you think about it, I have Chrome on my iPad.
I still think they could have called it a Nexus something or other, though.
Yeah, but that has an
Android connotation
exactly.
to it as well.
Yeah, and also warning to users: Chromecast may get hot to the touch. This is normal.
Hot to the touch.
Hot dongle.
Hot dongle. There's a title.
Great.
Sorry.
No, I mean, I'm putting it up there, but yeah. It is very interesting that they went with Chromecast. I wonder what the evolution of this product in particular was. I mean, I know that we know that Nexus Q is kind of part of that evolution.
Yeah.
But Chromecast, very big part of what it does is it takes whatever's in your Chrome browser, and Chrome's a big deal to Google, and puts it up on TV. I'm wondering if that's kind of where it started, right? Well, and they said, well, if we can do that, then we can build it into at these other apps to have support for it as well. Yeah. It also kind of illustrates the fact that Sundar specifically has been on the Chrome side for so long. We keep hearing about, this kind of flirting between the lines of Android and Chrome. This is actually kind of a sign of things to come, I think, in a certain way of saying, look, they both can coexist, and here's kind of one of the reasons why. I put that – oh, by the way, that link that I put in there, Brian, is Chromecast running a Game Boy emulator. I only put that in there to show that, yes, I mean, it's been fully hacked. So, and that link of the GTV hacker link is kind of one of the main ones. But, yes, so people are doing crazy things with it. And
yeah. Which is great.
Yeah, I mean, Chromecast in and of itself does not have a lot of memory on the stick. What is it, like 256K?
Yeah,
it's
just enough
something
to run the application. It doesn't need it.
It's not run. Yeah, it's really not running applications.
What I find fascinating is that this is basically what was in the Nexus Q minus all that audio stuff.
Yeah, and an amplifier. Yeah, right.
All the music stuff. Yeah, so it's a pretty dumb device. And I mean, all it is a media extender. That's all it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Chromecast, I'm guessing in even a year's time is going to be that kind of thing that you just see listed off as saying supports Chromecast, like built into things, including Google TV. This is an extension for Google TV. They've already said Google TV isn't going anywhere. Yep. This is something completely different. Google TV is very good for gaming, for example, and this is horrible for that. So unless they want to completely give up the living room and all of the deals that they're working on, to coincide with Google TV, I don't see Google TV going anywhere anytime soon.
This is very much a video product. This is, I mean, if you look at it launched, with the Chrome icon, but also YouTube, of course, but then you got Netflix in there and Google Play. If this launched without Netflix on there, do you think that it would be, and that whole Netflix deal wasn't a part of it, do you think that everyone would be screaming as much? But the fact that so many people use Netflix...
I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. I mean, we should mention it came on day one with a 3-month free subscription to streaming on Netflix, which essentially, if you got in on that, even if you're a current subscriber to Netflix, if you got in on that, brought down the price to like $13.
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, that just illustrates just how much of a no-brainer this thing is for what it does. I can't wait to get mine.
Yeah.
The Nexus, including Netflix for me was Google's way of saying this is not just a way to play Google content. Right? Yeah. This isn't just a way to play YouTube. It's not just a way to play Play Store things. They had to say this is a generic open specific protocol that this Google Cast protocol. And what I'm excited about is that we're going to see send to your TV buttons all over the web now in all different kind of video situations. And that's kind of cool because it makes your TV the secondary screen, but it also makes it this kind of social thing where I'm hanging out with my friends and, oh, did you see this kitten video? And just fling it up on the screen, and there it is. And I think we'll see a lot more people putting stuff up on their TV because they'll see that button. I think that this is going to become a thing that people do.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Roku and with other devices, you had to have the device and you had to have it all set up. But if there's just a button, and so many people have the stick, it's $35. That'll be something people do, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. It's really cool. And having the ability for everyone to tap into the API and create their own apps and support for it really just kind of sent it through the roof. The introduction of it was impressive. And then they got to that part. And then it was like, all right, done.
Sold.
Yeah. Tell me
how and when I want it. So they just really surprised everyone with that. They didn't surprise everyone with the next thing, though.
I'm literally buying it right now.
Good.
I'm sold.
Good. You can't have this, though. This belongs to Liz.
Yeah, no, it's Liz. I'm jealous of Liz, as always. And so, now I need one.
She says, get your head off my dongle. There we go. So what was the other thing they
The other interesting thing, as I put my purchasing on pause, the worst-kept secret was the new Nexus 7, which we have here
as
well.
This is mine. This is Leo's.
So Jason will open it up as I go through, as I kind of tell you a little about it. But as predicted or as suspected, it's running a quad-core Snapdragon S4 Pro CPU, 7 inches, with a resolution of 1920 by 1200, 5 megapixels. This is comedic.
I promise I won't break Leo's Nexus 7. He loves it too much.
5 megapixel rear camera and dual rear speakers, 4G LTE model offered in the U.S., as well as Wi-Fi only. And, you know, yes, the new Nexus 7 will work on AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile's LTE networks all in a single mode. Wow, look at that display.
Yeah, I know. The display is really impressive.
Yeah,
I
mean, that looks good even from here.
I mean, it's sharp.
Well, you said that before. I hadn't seen one yet. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to upgrade. And you're like, oh, wait till you see this display.
I'm telling you, 1080p is one of those things where people are like, it's kind of unnecessary. And then you see one and you're like, wow, okay, that really looks good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's got a nice, you know, it's got a soft touch on the back. Some people are complaining that it's not the the pleather steering wheel cover type thing. But I think it's nice.
That just looks...
I'm going to open another tab and start another purchase.
Beautiful. No, not so much. That is that is really nice.
Yeah.
Snappy.
Yeah, Leo just says
it is snappy.
He's absolutely loving it. He was showing me the Simpsons Tapped Out game on there.
Yeah,
I was just like, oh my god, look at all the detail! Like you just really saw it on that game.
Uh-huh.
Really, really good stuff. I mean, we knew a lot about it going in, obviously, but I think they delivered. And it's what is it? Is $229, $239 the cost on it? Oh, hey, triangulation. Interviewing this guy named Leo Laporte. There you go.
Look at that. That's loud.
And we've lost. Yes, it's very loud, too, because it has the dual stereo speakers. And, yeah, it's very loud.
That looks really nice.
There we go. Thank you, Brian. Next to 7, 16 gigs, $229.
You were saying $229 was going to be bad. I don't think it's that bad.
I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah.
Was I saying that?
Well, yeah, because $199 is sweet. $199 is
absolutely. Obviously, that would have been great. But, yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, so Nexus 7, it exists. We're here. It's thinner. I'm going to compare it to mine.
Oh, yeah, put it up side by side. Show those.
Look at that. It can fit. Look at my big head. It can fit inside the old one. I don't know if you can see. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Interesting. So they got the full. It's interesting because they got the full size of the device from a width standpoint down when it's in portrait, but it's wider.
Yeah,
In landscape because of the thicker bezel, which they say they did to make it easier for holding for like movies and games and stuff.
Yeah, but, the speakers.
They were likely making a little bit room for a battery or the dual cameras.
That's right. Yeah, the dual cameras as well. There you go. New Nexus 7. I think I kind of have to get one.
That's a fine looking device right there.
Yeah.
Nice. I wasn't going to upgrade, but now that I'm looking at it.
Man. I wasn't going to either.
Yeah, I know. I'm curious.
Dang it.
Do you feel like you need to now?
I don't feel like I need to. I feel like I want to.
If you use it as much as you say, Ron, it sounds like you use it a lot.
I know.
It'd probably be a worthwhile upgrade.
No, I use it so much that my Dodo case is falling apart.
Oh, yeah. No, that's
so
dedicated user. Gazelle. Yeah. Gazelle, man.
There you go.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, and finally, Gina.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, if you're impressed by the new Nexus 7, BGR.com, Boy Genius Report, is saying that maybe you should wait to see what Amazon has to launch. Their sources are saying that Amazon is shooting for a fall launch for their 3 new Kindle tablets, possibly as early as late September. So there'll be a replacement. This is all rumor. This is all speculation. This is all BGR.com's sources. Nothing official. But we'll have a replacement for the entry-level Kindle Fire tablet, and the other two will be replacements for the current flagship Kindle Fire HD models. And BGR.com has some rumored specs on those HD models. The 7-inch Kindle Fire HD tablet, they already reported, will have a high-resolution 1920 by 1200 pixel display and a new design. They now know, supposedly, it'll be powered by a quad-core Qualcomm Snapdragon 800 system on a chip, which includes 4 Crate 400 CPUs and Adreno 330 graphics. Prototypes are said to be clocked at about 2 gigahertz. The new 7-inch Kindle Fire HD is set to launch later this year. Also includes upgrade, 2 gigabytes of RAM, front-facing camera, Wi-Fi, and available cellular connectivity. It'll ship with 16, 32, or 64 gig of internal storage. And the internal unit tests they're currently running Android 4.2.2 Jelly Bean with Amazon's heavy customizations. And then there's a larger 8.9 Kindle Fire HD model that Amazon is planning to release, which is similar to the 7-inch model. Behind its 2560 by 1600 pixel high definition display, and same Snapdragon 800 chipset will power that tablet. And so Basically, the moral of the story is if you are thinking about the new Nexus 7, you might want to wait maybe for another month or two to see what Amazon is going to come up with for the holiday season, because it sounds like these Kindle HD, Kindle Fire HD models are going to be pretty hot from a specs perspective anyway.
But I it's funny because it's like the Kindle, I mean, again, it's the Amazon baked in customer who I am one of. I'm talking like I'm not one of them. I buy everything from Amazon, although not from apps. Like I haven't completely embraced Amazon from a digital standpoint other than books, other than the Kindle app. I think
you
they
don't
gotta
do any streaming media. You don't do Amazon Instant ever?
That's really funny because I do, but on the Google TV. not on my device, which I'm a Prime member. I really should. I don't know why. You know why? It's because it's not app-based, because there's no app. That's the thing. Like, if for some reason they're resistant to making a streaming video app and it runs through the HTML5 player that they've got on their browser, which drives me crazy on the Google TV, but it works and it's fine. But,
does it? As soon as I saw it wasn't actually an app, I was like,
It works great, actually. All you got to do is you just got to be very nimble with the cursor and go to the full screen button, and then it's fine.
Yeah,
no, I've watched a bunch of stuff on through Amazon, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, they've got to stay competitive, but I don't think we'll ever be in a world where the Amazon Kindle is dominant. I think that they're just, they have got such a large install base that they can build off that of their customers and have a successful, product from that. So,
Kindle
never gets as excited.
Kindle never doesn't. It still feels a little bit like an e-reader, and it still feels like I can the Kindle app anywhere.
I think we're a little snobbish.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Well, we're Android fans. Right, Android enthusiasts.
Yeah.
I think we're growingly even more not the target audience for the Kindle Fire.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, Gina, you got an email.
We got an email from Matt in Vegas who writes, "Hi, AAA crew. I've been an Android fanboy since my MyTouch on T-Mobile, but lately I've fallen on Android hard times. My GNX died and the loner S3 I had died as well, red light of death. With this, I've had to resort to using an old Droid X. So here's your mission if you decide to accept it. Pull out that old Droid running Gingerbread and run exclusively off that for a week or two, because I'd love to hear your views on this flashback and assessment of how far we've come. Also, I just don't want to be alone in my pain." Desperately waiting on the Moto X.
All right, who wants to take
Matt this? Vegas.
Who wants to take this challenge?
No, I'm having too much hard. I'm on Hard Knocks already.
Matt in Vegas is wow. I mean, he doesn't want to be alone in his pain, but I don't. Can you even do that?
I'll confess. I bought a Ting phone, like a mid-range Ting phone, not even really mid, a lower-end Ting phone running Gingerbread with full intention of actually trying to live with it. And I booted up and I looked at Gingerbread, which I look at on a fairly regular basis, like in the simulator while I'm doing development. Right. We still support Gingerbread, my app. And I was just like, I can't do this. Like, it just felt so old, like such a throwback. I just couldn't do it. Even the UI just seems so ancient. So Matt, I thought about it. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if I'll even last a day. Maybe for fun, I'll give it a try. Yeah. Jason made a note in the document here that said, ha, 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 in all uppercase. No way.
You should do it for a day, but then chronicle it with your Google Glass. Like, take video, take video of your experience.
That would be the most frustrating video ever.
It would go viral.
I'm sure that the My Glass app does not support Gingerbread, and I probably wouldn't be able to.
That's a very good point.
You'd have to carry your other device just for My Glass, right? In your back pocket.
I have fond memories of the G1, like, from, long ago when I had the G1.
Yeah.
Running, that was running 1.6, which is like what, donut?
Yeah.
But only in my memories. I feel like if I had G1 in my hand right now and I tried to use it, I'd hate it.
Thankfully for me, the two droids that I have, neither of them work anymore. So yes, I can't do it.
I have a Nexus S laying around somewhere. I should dig that up and see what happens. It feels like a toy and it's tiny. It feels like something you get in a vending machine. That's crazy.
The Nexus One, that phone I love.
The Nexus One, I love that phone too. That phone was great. I wonder what happened to my Nexus One.
Would you go back to that?
Oh, I remember what happened with that. No, I gave it to somebody. Yeah.
Mm.
Oh. I think the Nexus One ran Gingerbread. Did it? I have to check. That was great. That little ball.
Oh, it was great. That was a great design phone.
I can't remember if it hit if it hit to 4-3. Definitely not 4-3.
Yeah.
Gingerbread.
All right.
Boy, yeah, that's a world I don't want to live in, and I'm sorry that you have to do that, Matt, but it'll make the Switch, whatever new device you do get, that much sweeter.
Exactly.
That'll be a good upgrade.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into apps.
So for you gamers out there, the much-awaited Google Play Games app is now live in the Google Play Store. It's available for download, and it's the easiest way for you to discover new games, track achievements and scores, play with friends around the world. It brings all your gaming on Google Play together in a unified Android experience. Yeah. So you've been dying for a game-specific app, and now you've got it, which is great. I'm not a big gamer. I guess I can see. I mean, having all the games in one app to download is probably nice, but probably the achievements and the friends and all that sort of stuff makes it a little better. Obviously, yeah. Game Center on iOS has done really well. But what's even more interesting and what everybody always wants is a little bit of the retro feel. But it was discovered that within the Google Play Games app, the Konami code works as an Easter egg.
Of course.
So if you do the long, and sadly I don't have it remembered anymore. I used to, but so if you're in the Google Play Games app and swipe in the following directions: up, up, down, down, left, left, right, left, right. The app will then provide you the button to pop up to finish the code with a BA start.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
Do it, person in video, and then,
ta-da.
What does it say?
It says. The thing that says all your game are belong to us. So
worth it.
They're definitely playing into the gamer, you know, Easter yeah. eggs and that sort of thing. But yeah. But so you gamers out there, go play Google Play Games. Much easier now, and you got a Konami code.
Yeah, now I feel the pressure if we ever feature a game on the show. Like, it's got to do tie it in yeah, there. Yeah. Fortunately, that's not the case with mine today.
I don't feel that pressure.
No?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Textbooks are coming to Google Play for purchase and for rent. Partners include Pearson, Wiley, Macmillan Higher Education, McGraw-Hill, and Cengage Learning. Excuse me. The service will launch in August at some point. Prices not announced, but Google did mention an 80% discount compared to the normal retail prices. I have to imagine if you're renting a textbook in digital form, it's got to be just miles better than any of the situations that I found myself in I was going to university.
My God. I mean, normally I'm like, you know, I like the time I went to college in. I was there in the late 90s. It was early internet. It was all that sort of stuff. But those textbooks, man, talk about the biggest scam in the universe.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
The amount of money we spent on textbooks, it was just crazy. So then textbooks supposedly are the future. So we'll see.
There we go.
As the march of print to die gets one step closer.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't want print to die ever. It's paying my rent right now. So.
Yeah. Well, for now you're not in textbooks. So.
Right. Yeah. Thankfully.
Yeah. You're good. You're in much more exciting books.
Yes.
Android police noticed that the Google's malware scanner introduced in Android 4.2 moved to the Google Play Services app. So we're starting to reap the benefits of Google decoupling a bunch of its system updates to that Google Play Services app to kind of combat fragmentation. So Google has this malware scanner. This is not to be confused with Bouncer, which is the system that runs in the Play Store and flags apps that are malicious apps in the Play Store as bad apps. This is actually a client-side process, this malware scanner, that lets you know if there's anything fishy going on with any app that you install on your device, particularly, I think it even works it when you're sideloading APKs, which, as we've discussed, is one of the major ways that you can get a malicious app on your device. That'll steal information or do other evil things. So this change may have happened a few months ago. I think that it was noticed. I think J.R. Raphael noticed it. But Android Police just wrote it up, and I feel good about that. I've actually gotten the pop-up, the hey, I forget actually what the copy is, but it's like, hey, we're scanning this. Google may regularly check installed apps for potentially harmful behavior. And you can go into settings and Google settings, verify apps to see that in action. So good on Google for scanning for malware and for being able to deploy that, I think, from Gingerbread and above via the Google Play Services app.
Yeah. More and more useful stuff rolling into Play Services.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's become a really important part of their plan right now. So
it's true.
That's a great, great use of it.
All right, we got an email from Down Under. Our buddy Anthony from Melbourne, Australia, writes in with a bizarre question, and I'm kind of curious what the community thinks of it. Anthony says, hey, AAA team, I recently started using Google Play Music. It makes life a lot easier that I'm no longer required to store music locally on my device. I like the idea of streaming my music. It's been working great. Excellent. Congratulations, Anthony. I uploaded my collection, but I've come across something that seems a little odd. I uploaded the Pearl Jam album Binaural. Is that how you pronounce it? Binaural?
Like
Binaural. Whenever I play the song on the album called Of the Girl, there's no singing. The song is truly instrumental. This only happens when I play through Google Play Music on my phone or through the web browser. I've heard of people uploading explicit albums and getting ones with the swearing removed. This makes it sound like they match tags to pre-existing music on their server and linking that song to save space. Maybe I've just been linked to an instrumental version of the song. Anyway, I went to play.google.com/music and I flagged the song as incorrectly matched. It said that a different or I presume correct version will be uploaded in the next day. I'm really confused, and if someone could shed some light on how it actually works, a solution to my issue would be great. And I gotta say, I looked this one up. I've spent a lot of time in Google Play Music. I have not found anybody. I haven't run into this, and I haven't found anybody else complaining about it. It could have incorrectly matched to an instrumental version, but I don't even know if an instrumental version of that song exists. I'm wondering if for some reason there was something with the file that you had uploaded. Like, was that MP3 that you downloaded from a service, or was it something you ripped? Was it encoded in a different way that when it got uploaded, it went through some sort of filter or some sort of thing and had it, you know, they stripped out the vocals? Stripping out the vocals is not easy, and so that's why I'm wondering if there's something else going on. Anthony, I'd be really curious if it ends up being matched to a correct file, like if this just corrects itself. Please write in and let us know. But
This is weird. So I just did a Google search of the girl Pearl Jam instrumental, and there are a ton of results of different versions of that song that are all instrumental. 2000 is the date. It really seems to me like it's matching to something else.
That must be it then.
Yeah, that's got to be it.
And there is a version with lyrics, I believe, because there are also sites for Of the Girl lyrics meaning. Yeah. So I would imagine that means there are lyrics.
It's got to be a mismatch to the instrumental version.
I think maybe you mentioned this, but there are ways to correct the match, but I feel like he's saying that he's done that.
Yeah, so you just got to wait to see if they correct it.
Yeah,
I would be curious to look at the metadata of your original file to see if the word instrumental was in it or if it was tagged incorrectly or the track number was incorrect on the album.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, maybe a lot of times you're seeing a lot of these enhanced versions of albums that come out with where the original album had 10 songs, but the one you downloaded had 15 because there are demos and instrumental versions, and maybe the track was mislabeled. Like anything that could, because these are all programmatic. It's not people matching them. It's just they're looking for the data that they get and matching it to something else. You're absolutely right that what's happening is what you think is happening is that you're uploading a song. They're matching it to a song on their servers. They're not saving the file you uploaded. They're unless they don't match it.
Yeah.
You know, there are some rare exchanges. Like I just uploaded a bunch of live stuff that stayed up there. But to stuff that's commonly released that they have license to, it's getting matched. So curious. So let us know if they correct it for you. If anyone else has run into it, let us know. I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, totally curious about that. It's very strange.
Yep.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor of today's episode, the ever awesome Gazelle. We love Gazelle. Do you want the new Samsung Galaxy S4? Are you thinking you might want to get the new Motorola X phone, which is going to be announced in a couple of days or unveiled officially, I believe, on Thursday. We're going to hear all about it. So next week's episode, we'll talk about it. If you think you might want that, now is a perfect time to go to Gazelle. That's what it's all about. Before you upgrade, and you should do it right now if you're even considering it, make sure you sell your used phone gadget to Gazelle for cash. And you can find out how much you can get through gazelle.com right now. Just go to gazelle.com. And you can basically find your item there. They make it really easy, give you lots of pictures of the different devices so you can spot it very quickly. You tell them the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones, iPads. They take a lot of devices, even more than they ever have before in the last couple of months. You get a risk-free offer for your gadgets, and Gazelle locks in that quote for 30 days. Lock it in for 30 days. That's why it's important to do it now, because if you wait, your gadget actually loses value over time. It doesn't gain that value. And then everybody else is doing it because they also want the Moto X phone, and now suddenly you can't get as much as you could 2 days before, which is where we're at right now. So there you go. Gazelle is actually buying back a larger selection of tablets. tablets even. And in addition to the iPad, you can now sell to Gazelle Select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, Asus tablets. All you got to do is go to gazelle.com to get your offer and do it today. Because like I said, your gadgets may lose value every day that you wait. You get paid in cash. Payment is fast, often within a few days of the item being received. It's risk-free and offers are good for 30 days. They'll even wipe your data for free if you don't happen to do that. They're very trustworthy in that regard as well. So, you know, Gazelle's just a great way to do this. They've paid $100 million to over 500,000 customers. That's because it's so easy to do. Free shipping. Most items actually qualify for a free box that they send you and you just throw it in and send it back to them. Fast processing, no listing hassles. Many reasons to check it out. We've talked about it on so many Twitch shows, but if you haven't been convinced yet, just go there and see what you can get for your device. Guarantee you'll be pretty happy. What is your iPhone, Samsung, and other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out yourself. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. We thank Gazelle for their support of All About Android and Twit. All right, it's that time you've been waiting for. Time to get into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena!
All right, so last week, let's take a look at last week's poll. We had four apps. Wow, that was a busy episode.
Tony was here.
And... Yeah. Space Team!
So I knew Space Team was going to win.
Yelling loud command!
Yeah, I know.
It was an impressive demo.
I watched it afterwards, and I was like, wow, that's really annoying really fast.
I happily deleted that app when I got home, by the way. Because for a moment, I was like, oh, I'll keep it. That was fun. When am I ever going to play this with three or four other people ever again?
Yeah, so. Like you don't have other things to do with three or four people, like drink.
Exactly.
So Space Team wins with 46%. Locket second at 22%. Floating Toucher. overcame its strange name.
Unfortunate name.
to beat out Fit Radio for third place at 21%. Fit Radio fourth at 12%. So, Gina, the reason I was taking pictures of you earlier was because I was trying to get a good picture for the app that you have.
I wonder if it's going to work.
It's weird with the monitor. I don't know if it's necessarily going to work. I ended up taking a picture of the only person that I could ask to pose in one place, and that was myself. So I'm sorry about that. I could take you, or I could take Ron as the other person. What do you think?
Nobody wants me.
So, I mean, try it with me. See if that works. I don't know. See if it'll work.
This will be interesting. Okay. So you might as well talk about it, and I have the screen up, Brian, if you want to show it.
Okay. So my app pick this week is called Face Switch. There are a ton of apps that do this in the Play Store, but this one is really good and it's free. It does exactly what you would think it does. It lets you take two photos of faces and combine them into one another. So, okay, Jason's taking a photo of me.
So it's like Face Off.
It's like Face Off. Okay.
Hey, there we go.
That's a really good picture, given that it's a picture of a television.
I know.
Not bad. So it does a pretty good idea of figuring out where the eyes are and aligning them, like so that the pictures are kind of the same shape. Let's see.
It did. It like rotated it.
Oh, did it rotate it?
Let's see here. Oh, you know what? I bet if, let's see here. I know that there's.
Can you flip it? There's definitely an editor.
Orientation. There you go. Yep.
Okay. All right, done.
Let's hope that
this takes it back. Okay. All right, so we're good. There we go. Awesome. All right, so we're good there.
Okay.
Now, so what do I do? These dots, is that eyes and nose?
Yeah, that's eyes and nose. Okay. Or it might be mouth. Hey, there's eyes.
Place circle over the eye. Select skin color. I see. Okay, so something like that. Okay. I'm sorry that I'm doing this to your face, Gina.
No, that's totally okay.
Okay.
All right, so once that's done, you can then...
I go back.
Save. Yeah, you go back.
Okay.
And then, all right, so there's you and there's me. So tap on one
here,
of
I'm going to go to me because I didn't know what I was doing there. All right, so let's see here. So skin color is something like that, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is going to be interesting.
Okay. So now there should be a start button. Okay. So tap on the start button.
All right. Here we go.
And it's going to show you. Okay. So now with the brush, if you tap on the brush, yeah, you can see how big it is. Make it a little smaller. Use that slider to go a little bit over to the left to make your brush a little smaller. Okay. All right. That's good. It doesn't have to go too small. Okay. Now, so if you rub over your eyes... It will replace your eyes with my eyes.
Oh, jeez.
So kind of selectively, yeah. Oh, boy. We're a little
personal. Oh, I'm afraid to do anything more.
Oh, that looks weird. You know what it is? Because our heads are sort of like angled in a different
way. Yeah. So then I can do the nose.
You know what?
Okay, so there was a face size thing that I missed.
There was a face size.
Well, your head is bigger than Gina's. Let's keep that in mind.
Let's go back here and see. Okay.
They have like default, they have a couple of like sample portraits, I think, that come with it that are actually, of course, photographed really well. And the size is, are matched up really well. Let's see.
I know. Now I just,
You can zoom in on my head a little bit more and see.
I just pinch? Oh, I see.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. So maybe I'll just do something like that. I wish I could do this and then show it on the other one, you know, so that I can like line them up perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this was like way off. Something like that?
Maybe move your eye, your left eye, lasso over a little bit. Yeah.
I see. So it gives you the little zoom so you can zoom in on the. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's got a lot of really nice controls for adjusting the faces to make them kind of align the same way.
Okay, now I feel like I need to go back into you and just make sure because. All right. Now I'm seeing like this.
Yeah.
Lined up very well. Okay. So what do we know? What should we get in the end?
In the end, you get to make a mashup of two faces. You get to replace feature. You get to add features from one face onto another. So you can look like what your celebrity baby would look like with your favorite celebrity. You can. Yeah, there we go. You can see what Jason looks like if he had my eyes.
Yeah, I'm just going to give.
Yeah,
give me your hair.
Yeah, put my hair on there.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that is
disturbing.
Really, really weird. Wow, you're doing a nice job with the hair there. It actually looks pretty good.
I feel like an artist.
This app actually does a nice job of and so there's the brush, which you selected the brush and then you kind of use your finger to draw in the parts that you want to swap. Oh, my God.
That is... Undo. Disturbing.
There's an eraser so you can undo and
I think you will.
Please undo. Hit that undo button. Okay, my God.
Look into my eyes, Ron.
Look at me wrong. I like you both a lot. It's just
I love this app. What does Switch do?
Switch is out like
jeez. No. No, hit switch. Go back. Please go back. No. My eyes. Sorry.
I'm sorry, Rod. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go, folks.
There it is. It's face switch. Once you're done, you can save the result to your channel.
I think that I must.
Via Facebook, you could share via any Android share menu. I think that's. I need this.
I'm gonna go ahead and save that. I might as well share this.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, I think everybody.
We totally freaked Ron out.
This is totally. Oh God. I like want to get a hammer and break the phone.
This is one of those arenas where you know the winner well before, and we haven't even started.
Why even bother?
I just want to play with this.
I'm actually really impressed that you got it you got results like that, given that you took a photo of me on the monitor and we were both angled the wrong way. It's got a good editor.
That hurts. Do you mind if I put that out on Google Plus?
Not at all. Go for it. All right. It'd be hilarious.
We're in this together, Gina.
We are. I actually have to thank you. That was a really great demo.
Awesome.
better demo.
Thank you, because like I said, I think before the show started, I really wanted to find a good one of these on Android, and I went searching probably like a month ago, and I could not find one. They all had bad ratings. This one's great.
There are a ton of these face swap type apps, and they all have sort of bad reviews, but this one, this is called Face Switch Swap and Morph. The editor is great. It's just, it's really, really fun. So it's free, but there's for in-app purchase, I think it's 99 cents. You can download a gallery of like celebrity VIP portraits that you can play around with. It looks good on a tablet, looks good on a phone. Just really fun. It's really fun for kids, fun for adults.
Let's rewind. It looks good on a tablet, looks good on a phone. Let's be honest. I don't know if that looked good, that photo. The app looks good. The photos leave a little to be desired.
Okay, fine. I won't. The photos are up to you, but the app itself lays out well on a tablet and a phone and works really well.
Those photo morphy, those apps, they freak me out, man. That's just that.
I have no idea why that would freak you out.
Yeah.
That looks normal to me.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I can't wait to
That was very funny. That was very good.
Thank you, Jason. That was great. That was a good swap. Good switch.
Great job. Bringing it this week.
Really? Well, I don't even know. Why do I even bother now?
Just phone it in. It's cool.
I lost really bad last week. So
You did. It was a good way to rebound. So, why? Wait, can you go back to...
Oh, boy.
Where's the switch? Ready? Go back. Can you take back the thing? Oh, like that is... Like I'm pretty sure I saw that woman in Indiana in Walmart. Right? I'm pretty sure.
Oh, man.
Wow.
All right. Audio listeners are probably throwing the phone at this point. What is your app, Ron?
My app. Last week we saw Locket and I thought it was really interesting. And so I found another lock screen app called Sparky Lock Screen. It doesn't take your face and mash it up with somebody else's. But it does make your lock screen a lot more attractive and unique. So what it does is it's got a bunch of lock screens pre-programmed already in that are that have got pretty nice animations and basically make your phone, like when you turn, you know, when you turn your phone on and it seems to be you see somebody who's got a different phone, like, ooh, what's that? Like, I've had this only for like a day and a half, and I've already had people go, oh, what is that? So I've got the first one up here. The first one that they offer is this little donut one. And you've got this little donut, and it's hard to see on the screen, but you see here it says message, it says mail, and that says call. There's this little dot, and I can move this dot around. And if I go right into messages, it will go into highlights, and it'll go into my text messages. Or if I go to call, it'll go right into the phone. So that's just a nice, easy way to jump right into the device itself. I'm going to turn it off. I got to wait a second for the lock screen. To get to the device, period, just to unlock it, all you got to do is swipe up from the bottom and it unveils your phone. The app itself is where you can choose the different animations you'd like to choose from. Nice sentence there, where you can choose the different animations you'd like to choose from.
Face switch blew
my mind. Okay. But anyway, so they've got a whole bunch already preloaded in, and they're all each individually really interesting and neat. And they've got this whole neat little UI that you can interact with. You can select one, and then you can test it out before you actually activate it. So you can say test it, and it will show you the instructions for that specific lock screen. So for this one, you need to slide up to unlock, or you slide right to do the action, and you can actually do a test with it. So I can slide the calls, and it'll go to the phone, or it can, you can kind of play with it a little to get a feel for it. They're really nicely designed. Again, you know, I was talking earlier about the use of photography. All of them are heavy photo based. Let's see, there's one that is, where is it? This one is really interesting in that it's got a bunch of different photos here that you swipe as you go left and right. So this one has got a telephone box from England for the phone. This one's got this kind of like stars, you know, mountainscape for the mid one for messages. It's got a little paper airplane. So it's just the kind of thing where, like, if you want your lock screen to look different and to look interesting, this is a great, it's an easy way to do it. They do give you some information such as a date and a clock, and you also kind of get your battery life in there. The one, the kind of the one, the couple of And you can see I did it right there. The couple of detractions I have for it is that a lot of these animations require you to swipe up from the bottom, and I found myself triggering Google Now more often than unlocking the phone. So they might want to look into that interaction and maybe changing it to a different one. But this one was one of my favorites. It was basically a faux boarding pass. And when you look at it, it kind of flips over, and you can type in your name. I put in my Twitter name. And it says passenger name, and then it uses, you know, it's got some dummy information for the date and the time. But then here you can swipe to go to the phone or to go to messages or whatnot. And, you know, each one has got – it's very interactive, and they've got – like this one's got this little dial, and the dial actually works. So if I turn that dial, you know, it triggers whatever the action is. Really nice, well-designed. Here you got the little calendar. It tells me that it's Tuesday. It's bold out of the other dates. I just dug it. And lock screens are not something that I've ever really gotten really super into, because I kind of feel like, you know, whatever, I'll just go with the default one. But these ones actually made me think that again, because they're just so unique. You know, like this one is called Surreal, and you touch the swinger, and that triggers this menu down here to message, call, or go to your mail. So I don't know. It was pretty neat stuff. It's called, I don't remember what it's called, Sparky Lock Screen. If you need security with your phone, if you need to use the PIN or anything like that, this doesn't support that. If you have that activated, you'll have to enter in your PIN after the lock screen, which is kind of annoying. But if you don't mind having your phone somewhat unlocked and you want it to look different, Sparky Lock Screen is only $1.99. Check it out. It was fun. So there you go.
Does it make you money every time you unlock your screen?
It does not make me money every time I unlock the screen. Way to refer to last week, Jason. Mm-hmm. Way to tank my app.
I don't think
that... Why don't you pull up that face switch again?
No, every time I do, I start laughing and then I can't talk. Oh, man, no, not side by side. Yep. Okay. All right. So that was good.
There you go.
That was good. Mine is pretty fun, actually. It's called McPixel. It's a game. And I will warn you right on the outset. It has a sense of humor. Sometimes that sense of humor is a little kind of...
Risque
out there. So you might want to just kind of like... Just know that going in. If you're cool with that...
Be warned.
There's some stuff that... I hope doesn't happen when I show it on the screen, but
I hope it does.
Oh man, okay. this episode will just get even weirder. All right, so basically, here, I'll turn up the audio so you have a little bit of that. It's a, you know, I like these kind of throwback 8-bit style games. It's the kind of game where essentially you have all these levels and you have 20 seconds to save the day on each scene, right? So I'm going to go ahead and choose chapter 1 here. Okay. I'll jump in there. All right, I'll select my level here, and we'll go right in. And so it'll give you a scenario, and you have 20 seconds to figure it out. There we go. Let's get to the game. You are McPixel, and you're trying to save the day. If you don't save the day, things are going to blow up. That's literally the issue with every scene. So you're presented with this. You have 20 seconds. What do you do? Do you pick this up? And then hit that with it. Does that work? Hey, what do you know? I passed it. It works. I think. Yes. Okay. So I passed it. It's a really hard game. I think I've only ever gotten one of those little dotty things on any level that I've passed.
Wow.
So we've got this. What do I do? It's a submarine and I've got all these different items. Do I go over to the wheel and turn it? Will that prevent it from exploding? No. I exploded.
So you pretty much just get, you have enough time to do one thing.
No, right? Sometimes you can do them in succession, but if you do the wrong thing that one time, then it all blows up.
Then you blow up.
Okay,
this is so stressful.
Yeah, it's a little stressful. You got a cave and a caveman and a bone. Do I pick up the bone and give it to the caveman?
Whoa.
We get into a fight. And it doesn't matter. We're going to blow up because we didn't solve the problem.
Because there's a thing of gas on the...
Maybe I should have checked the thing of gas. We're window cleaners, supposedly. And there's a little spider and a broken window and a guy. What do I do? Do I go to the window that's open? Oh, there it is.
There's the gas.
Oh, no. Oh.
Look at that hole in the building.
All right. So there you go. That's McPixel. This a lot of times. There are a ton of levels. They also added 50 new levels as downloadable, free downloadable content. We'll pick up the thing. Oh, no, that was the wrong thing to do. I just exploded. And you just kind of keep going through it until you pass it. It's a lot of fun, though. It's a good time waster.
How do you solve this one? Pick up the bomb. Pick up the torpedo.
Okay, torpedo.
Yeah.
And then...
Captain?
No.
Oh.
It's not an easy game. It definitely has a big sense of humor. Like I said, sometimes a little on the dirty side, so keep that in mind.
What happens if it's dirty?
Well, I'm not going to tell you.
Now I got to play the game.
Yeah, all you have to do is launch the app, and the very first thing you see is actually
a little
on that scale. So there you go, McPixel. It's $2.99, and I've had a lot of fun with it. It's just kind of a cool kind of problem-solving game with definitely a cheeky sense of humor. So there you go.
Cheeky, I like it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm downloading it right now. I dig it.
All right, so... Interesting arena, I must say.
Yeah.
Face switch, Sparky lock screen, and McPixel. Which is your favorite this week? Go to AAAPoll.com/120, AAAPoll.com/120, and vote for your favorite. Early reports are in. And I mean, really, come on. Face switch.
Face switch is going to run away.
It's going to run away. Yeah. Because it's awesome.
From what I hear, the folks in India love the good lock screen. So that's what I'm really hoping for. That's what I'm really...
No!
Look, both photos just stare into your soul. Look at that. It's just like the expression on both of them. Like the one on the left is just like tentative excitement. And the one on the right is just curious and just kind of, it's just like...
I don't know what I'm doing here.
Oh, man.
And you shared that on Google Plus and said that we collectively look like a boy band member. The one where...
that's generous. That's totally generous.
That's pretty generous.
Yeah. No, I both think you're both lovely, but my Lord, wow. Wow.
There you go.
No, you look like somebody out of Narnia. You know what I mean? Like I expected all of like hooves, you know, like to be like a centaur or something.
It's true,
or,
actually. I think you're right.
I'm so glad you didn't take my picture.
I'm curious to know what people create with that. So if you want to send us some examples.
Yeah, post them.
I'm not sure we'll include them in next week's show because we might be just a little creeped out by it. But maybe one or two of them might make it in. Send it to AAA.com. Wait a minute. What? No. AAA@twit.tv. Sorry, I'm falling apart.
What shows get Narnia references, by the way? Do I get bonus points for that one? Or?
I think you do.
Yeah,
there you go.
I think you do. Yeah.
Because I think you nailed it, too.
I did,
so
yeah.
So it's not just a useless Narnia.
I could have gone reference. Lord of the Rings, but no, that's too obvious. I went Narnia. There you go. That's how you do it. That's comedy, folks.
That's something. Next week, TNT, Tech News Today's Ayaz Akhtar, or Know How, or he does a lot of other things.
Yep.
He's going to be on the show. And when I booked him, I didn't realize I'm not going to be here. So,
and you didn't realize that we don't get along at all. So that's going to be interesting.
No, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, awkward. I love
put the bomber in the middle.
We're going to miss you next week.
Yeah. I'm going to a friend's wedding, so I'm sure I'll be trying to use glass and having it lock up at just the right moment.
Critical moment.
Let's hope there's not a squirrel nearby or on the bride.
We'll see. I don't know. We might have to make a repeat occurrence of that just so that I can get it on film. So it's time for plug-in. What you got going on, Gina?
I co-host This Week in Google here on this network. It airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, so you should join Leo and myself and Jeff Jarvis tomorrow. And I work in an open source app called ThinkUp, thinkup.com. Check it out. We're working on a hosted service, so if you pop your email in and you auth your Twitter account, you'll be one of the first people in, so check it out.
Awesome. And Ron?
Cool. You can find me at about.me/RonXO, and that's got links to my Google Plus and my Twitter and my Facebook and all that fun stuff. And by day, you can find me at imagecomics.com, the home of great comic books such as Saga and The Walking Dead and many others. We got DRM-free comics available for download today. We just launched a PayPal integration today. So if you prefer to pay with PayPal, now you can do it. So DRM-free. Go check it out, imagecomics.com.
Like it. So I can finally announce what I've been working on.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. Yay!
I've spent the past year working on an album. I finally launched a Kickstarter yesterday to fund getting it mastered and anyone that wants to buy a copy of it on CD and stuff. I wasn't quite sure how best to go in that route. So I was like, I'll just do a Kickstarter and see what happens. I think in 24 hours, it's three quarters of the way there. So wow. I'm flabbergasted and amazed that it's done as well as it has. But if you want to check it out, you can go to Kickstarter and just search for Yellow Gold, or you can search for Jason Howell there, or you can go to my website. It's yellowgoldmusic.com, and I have a link there. But I'm really, really excited. It looks like, unless something horribly awry happens in the next 28 days, this might actually happen. And I'm really just kind of flattered that everybody...
Stretch goals.
I have ideas for stretch goals.
I'm actually waiting until it's like $399.99, like $399.99, and I'm gonna be the backer who put you over. That's my plan. That's my plan. So
excellent.
Because it's gonna happen like the next 24 or 36 hours.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, no, because all AA listeners and watchers and viewers have to back.
Exactly. You got the TNT push, and now you're gonna get the AAA push. I bet you it's gonna go over tonight. Well, there you go.
We will certainly find out. Yeah. Justin Robert Young is pointing directly at me. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Yeah. Oh.
Nexus.
No! After seeing that display, man, I want it. Awesome. It's really nice. It's really nice.
Best thing ever.
I'm very impressed.
Letting us use it.
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
Thank you, Leo.
I don't want to do without it. Understood. That's how good it is. Leo has to take it with him tonight.
I don't blame him.
All right, so that's it for this week for the show. Thank you for joining us once again. You can always leave us a voicemail. We are at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email if that's how you prefer, or a video mail, which is an email with a magical link to a video in it. That's aaa@twit.tv. You can find our show notes at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find past episodes on our site there, as well as iTunes and YouTube. You can find us on Twitter, @AndroidShow, on Google+, All About Android. We're all over the place. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.